This is The Strategist, episode 1300. My name is Zane Velji. With me, as always, Corey Hogan, Stephen Carter. Guys, it's a milestone.
They said it couldn't be done.
Yeah, they did say it.
We got to 1300 and we didn't fuck around with the audience, not even a little bit.
You know, 1299.9 was on the table for us, and we
was
didn't
it?
Go there.
No.
I think it shows growth, guys.
I don't think it does. I think I want to redo the intro now that I know that was on the table.
Oh, brother.
Yeah, growth. That's us.
Yeah.
So, what are we going to do? What are we talking about tonight?
What are we talking about tonight, Zane? Do you want to talk about you? I rode my bike and drove past your house a couple times this weekend.
Why'd you win, Zane? Oh, yeah. Are we going to talk about the membership cutoff for the Alberta NDP?
That's great.
Why'd
you win, Zane? We should probably focus on that. Hey, Zane.
Zane, why'd you win?
How many memberships did you guys sell through the portal?
I prefer the question on the 23rd, and I prefer a different question than why'd you win, Corey.
Oh, it's been over for like a month. Are we still doing this song and dance?
Are we still pretending?
Here? Yeah.
Are you guys still pretending? That's the question.
No,
you guys are pretending like it's over. It's not over. Okay, it's not over. Let me
tell
you.
It's not over. I mean, in the most literal sense, I guess somebody's got to still count the ballots and
apparently by hand.
Corey, your drink is going to spill. It's very much.
It was kind of at a weird angle. That's
yeah,
true.
It was extremely weird. On behalf of your wife and children, your drink is about to spill.
My recording space is a little different today. Little peek behind the screen here. I usually record on a giant couch. You know, I've got a table.
And what are you sitting on right now?
It's not part of a giant couch because my kids made a fort. And the one thing they made me promise before I went down to record was that I didn't wreck their fort. So
fuck, you should wreck their fort.
I might still. Depends. Yeah. I don't know.
Depends on how the episode goes. Carter.
Yeah, for sure.
You want to talk about my real estate. Yeah, go ahead.
Why'd you win, Zane? Don't try to change the subject.
I'm fine with it. Why'd you win?
Okay, Carter. Let me tell you something. This is episode 1300. This is a big milestone.
It's a leap year.
And you're not coming with the energy. What the fuck does that mean?
It's a leap episode.
Well, every 4 years we have a leap episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not divisible by 400.
That's not the type of celebration I was expecting.
Yeah.
So it's a leap episode.
Would it be divisible by four?
So a leap episode, we have to do an extra minute.
Yeah.
Every fourth episode
is a leap episode, actually.
That's I don't know if you know this. Doing some extra time, not a problem for me. Not a problem for the show in general. Generally has not been an issue. Do you know someone else who's going on shows? It's one Justin Trudeau. Have you heard about this?
I listened to one of them.
He's going on podcasts. Was it the one that he did in the United States for some reason whatsoever? Or was that the one he did? That was weird. Or the one he did in Saskatoon, Carter?
I thought it was a joke, apparently.
I listened to Freakonomics.
He was on Freakonomics.
It was interesting because the episode that they'd done about immigration was fantastic, and then they did the Trudeau episode, and it wasn't as good.
Well, hold on. How did Freakonomics make a Justin Trudeau episode? Do they just do a straight up interview, or do they make it about some sort of?
Yeah, a straight up interview, but it was like in the context of immigration, and then from there came all kinds of other things like carbon pricing and things like that. I mean, Freakonomics is a relatively far reaching economics podcast.
Yeah, but it's got a format. See, this is what I don't like, Corey. In the hypothetical world where the PMO would email us and say, Justin Trudeau, come on. We don't break format for anybody.
We've been looking for a new host, guys, though. I mean, I think that's...
If he wants to jump in as host and in the preamble to his questions, explain his thinking behind policies, that's fine. He's able to do that.
That would be
incredible. We're not breaking format, though.
I'm putting the invitation out right now. Justin Trudeau, if you want to host an episode of The Strategists...
In which you will also be able to
you can do everything Zane does. Yeah,
you can
preamble. You can ask a question for 2 minutes that tells us everything about what you think of the issue. Mm-hmm. Well, then you got to throw it to me and Stephen.
But are we going
to
pay him?
I think I'm open.
Are we going to pay him? Or can we get this
you know
for
what?
Free?
You know what?
Yeah, we'll pay him the same that we would pay Zane or Annalise. And I mean, not a lot, virtually nothing. Yeah.
But you know, no one complains. That's all I have to say. So I think he comes on.
I haven't seen Annalise in a while.
Okay, walk through it.
It's true. She returned one of my phone calls though the other day.
Oh, that's
so that was
nice.
A big step forward. Yeah.
Because
it'd been weeks.
This.
since the last
time. I saw her Friday night. She's doing well.
Are you guys like unionizing or something? Like,
should we are unionizing. Yeah, the underclass of the Strategist Media Corporation are unionizing on Friday night. That is correct. Carter, so are you seconding this invite by Corey? Are we inviting the Prime? Is this an official invite for the Prime Minister? Once again, to be clear, to host. Come on the podcast.
To be clear, to host.
And host it. Yeah, and I will step out of the way. Yeah, I will step out of the way.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, the more I think about it, this would actually be a great opportunity for him to get out a lot of his policy without really any opposition whatsoever, because he's left with the two of you to ask questions to.
That's true.
What do you mean? Like, we oppose his policies all the time.
You wouldn't do it to his face.
You
wouldn't do it to his face.
Can you drop the affect, please, sir?
I like that you're saying it now. Yeah. You wouldn't do it. Imagine a 35-year-old, 50-year-old, handsome white dude sitting in front of you right now asking you questions, Carter. You wouldn't do
it. I don't have to imagine. I got Corey right across the way.
Right here. right here, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yes, yes. Carter, you wouldn't do it. You're all fucking talk.
You know what? I would totally do it.
You know what? Here's
I
what
would
you should
totally
do.
Do it.
You know what? Okay, I've changed
one
my
of his
mind.
Questions you is going to be, how do I win? How do I win? And Corey and I will tell him, drop the affect. Boom. The first
okay, so here's it. The invite. Here's the invite. Under the Strategist Media Corporation DEI policy, we're inviting the Prime Minister to take my hosting chair. So it's going to be three white guys. The first question's really going to be about. Okay, yeah, well, that's true. Speaking of underclass, maybe he might join Annalise and I afterwards.
Yeah, yeah, he'll unionize for sure. You see their average earnings? Terrible.
The invite is officially out. So for anyone listening at the PMO, Corey, where can they contact us?
Just talk to Doug Wong. He knows how to get a hold of Steven. And that'll be that.
Listen, guys, I don't like to brag or anything, but the PMO has my email address. It's on the blocked list, but I'm still pretty proud of it. Pretty proud.
Fantastic. Okay, Carter, that's good. We got that out of the way. Let's move it on to our first segment. Our first segment, laws amongst laws. Carter, Bill 20. Omnibus. Is it not a omnibus? It's a creation of municipal political
party. It's not really omnibus.
No, it's more.
It's an omnibus within scope. That's what I was going to say. It's got a lane and then it does a shit
ton
of stuff.
I'll give it to you, Zane. I'll give it to you.
Okay. Thank you. It's an omnibus. Thank you. What if Trudeau said that? What if Trudeau was right here being like, Bill 20, it's an omnibus bill? Would you be like, Justin?
I'd be like, I'm sorry, Prime Minister. You're incorrect. It's not an omnibus bill.
You wouldn't call him.
What I'm trying to tell you is, Zane, I'm nicer to you than I would be to the PM.
No, I don't
That's
think
what
so.
I'm nicer no, to you I than I would so. Be. For sure. For sure.
I don't think so. Yeah. Carter, a new bill would give the Alberta government more power over municipalities, including granting cabinet the power to remove councillors from office and forcing councillors to repeal bylaws that the province doesn't like. It also has a creation of political parties at the municipal level. But, Carter, it's a pilot project. It's a pilot project only taking place in Edmonton and Calgary. That latter part is what I want to spend the bulk of the time on, which is the municipal political parties. It has been telegraphed for a while. It is here. But I'd be remiss to say that there isn't a whole ton of other stuff in here. And Corey, rather than discussing all that stuff in detail, which folks can find on your and Steven's West of Center appearance, where you somehow forgot my number. What are you shrugging? What's this? Like,
listen, we weren't supposed to literally
texted Kathleen while we were recording that particular episode.
Did I do that?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, okay.
It's pretty needy.
Said, well, here's what happens. I have to coordinate for the two of you, even though I cannot go on the show because I'm busy trying to help a political campaign, not winning one, helping one. I can't go on the show.
It's over. You're not.
But I'm trying to coordinate your lives. I'm giving you guys a solid. And I want to make sure it goes well.
Giving us a solid. How is that helping us at all?
Let's just say one of the two of you are harder to get into that door.
Which one?
No comment.
Which one? CBC loves me.
Steven left like a...
What did you leave? Did you shit on the desk afterwards? It was one of those situations?
I might have.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
I did not. I was very polite this time.
It's always a blaze of glory. Yeah.
You guys actually did a tremendous job on the West of Center pod with Kathleen. Emma Graney was the guest.
She's
sadly,
great,
trying
by
to,
the way. Pull your socks up, brother.
She couldn't host for a shit. That's what I'd say. Okay. You guys did a great job. You guys deep dived on that. I'm not going to try to rehash that. Other than to start with this question, Corey. Is this a big strategic miss by the UCP? Maybe I'm not even talking about base politics, etc., but in terms of what they're opening themselves up for on an accountability level here, by defanging municipalities, as this legislation allows them to do, are they now just taking the ability to take all the shit that a councillor or a mayor or council and mayor would get together and just wear that themselves? To me, that seems like the most intriguing and perhaps most problematic strategic part of Bill 20, even if I was a supporter of the UCP.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I certainly believe that they have opened themselves up to all sorts of headaches in the future. We talked a little bit about this at Westa Center, but here's the challenge. You have effectively, by saying cabinet now has the ability to rewrite bylaws, rescind bylaws, get rid of councillors that people don't like, you have effectively made every municipal problem your problem. And there are basically two reasons provinces have municipalities and provinces download responsibilities to municipalities. You can imagine and you can pretend it's because local governance is really important and you want to have that local responsive government that's right there and it's ready to deal with the challenges that people have on a local level. Mm-hmm. And there is some truth to that. But another reason that provinces download things to municipalities is because they're fucking headaches and they don't want to deal with them. They're a total pain in the ass. People are absolutely unreasonable. They want to have gold-plated services for everything from shoveling roads to, you name it. Like, I want the best rec centers. I want everything perfect. And I don't want to pay a penny in property taxes, mm-hmm. which, by the way, is mm-hmm. the only lever you really have as a city. So it's all agony. It's all pain. And now it's all your problem, provincial government, because the minute there are decisions made in any municipality across this province, and there are a lot of municipalities across this province where somebody thinks that's not right, they're going to start lobbying cabinet. They're going to start going out there and saying, I don't like this bag bylaw. I don't like this upzoning. I don't like in Tabor that now we have a new stop sign. Like, you fucking name it. Mm-hmm, and they are mm-hmm. now the responsible authority, and they're going to start hearing from people on all sorts of stuff where before they would say, take it up with your counselor. Reasonably so. Right. So, I mean, I do wonder if their eyes are not bigger than their stomachs on this one, because yes, it does afford them the authority that you can imagine people wanting to have when you're in power. And you say, well, I don't like that. And I'm the province. And so we'll change
the
laws.
And they're a creation of me. So, like, someone's finally got to fucking do this shit and we're going to do it.
Absolutely. But you are also getting all of those headaches. And I do not know if at the end of the day it's worth it for the provincial government.
Carter, there's so much to discuss, but I want to ask the same question to you. Do you agree that this is a strategic hole that they've left in here? And if it is, can we work together to try to fill that strategic hole for them? Like, what would you do if you fundamentally realized that this was, what it was going to open you up to, which is other people's shit is now your shit, even in the most indirect fashion. But first, give me a sense. Do you agree with the analysis of Corey?
Well, I'm totally glad you asked this question because, we did almost an hour long show on West of Center, and this was the only thing I agreed with Corey on. So I'm glad you opened it up this way so that we could
harmony.
Well, this harmony will be needed for the next part of this segment. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, but I think that that McIver's already starting to set the stage for it by saying, they've only taken action against the municipality once in the last while. I would anticipate that they would be very reluctant to use this. And I think that what they should do is say, this is only going to be used in the most egregious of examples, and nothing that is before council right now, nothing that is imagined by council right now, nothing that we can see is actually going to trigger this law. We have set such a high standard for ourselves that, and one high standard is public health. That's the where we have to reach to. And there may be other high standards, but that's the one that we can articulate right now. And the rest are going to be super high standards. So we're not going to use this to, right away, they could repeal this land use bylaw thing if it passes after this marathon public hearing. They could totally repeal that or force city council to repeal it. Mm-hmm. But I think that sets too low a standard. And then you're really going to be stuck in the situation that Corey articulated, and I 100% agree with. Way to go, Corey.
Thank you, buddy.
How do you fill this pothole, of this political pothole, so to speak, Corey?
Yeah.
What would you be doing if you're the UCP and MacIver right now?
I mean, for sure, the framing that Stephen has said. MacIver has basically said things to this effect. This is what they're going to say. This is what they're going to try to do. But make no mistake, this is a very tempting, very alluring power to use, right? A cabinet meets regularly, you know, at least once a week, more than that during session. Maybe slightly less than that during the summer, but basically perpetually is my point. And anytime something comes up, they'll have this temptation to maybe intervene because, let's face it, when you've got dozens and dozens of municipalities, there are dozens and dozens of opportunities for somebody to do something that seems wrong or dumb. And you're just going to have these examples come and you're going to have people say, well, if it wasn't built for this, what was it built for? And you'll start to see that pressure build. And, I said on West of Center, I'm old enough to remember when the notwithstanding clause was something nobody was going to use. And if you kind of look at the last 40 years, just the increased frequency with which it's being used across the country, really, I think, tells the entire story of this, right? Like, you're going to see people hesitant at first and a little less hesitant and a little less and a little less and a little less. And then, bam, they're in a lot of fucking trouble. I just think it's going to happen a lot faster than 40 years because of kind of the cadence of all of this. And the notwithstanding clause did have kind of this moral consideration that's just not here with this legislation. But what I find most interesting about this is when Rick MacIver talks about this will only be used as the most egregious of examples. And then he used this one example of a mask bylaw in Edmonton, superseding the provincial government's authority in health. They solved that. They resolved that, you know? And if you're only going to use it for the most egregious of things, there is already a way to do that. And it's to get the legislature to vote on an act. Not actually that hard to do. And so
when you've got a majority.
Yeah, for sure. So I think that I think that the solution to the type of problem he's talking about already exists. It's an act of the legislature for like seriously, deeply egregious things. Fucking call them back. Who cares if it's the dead of summer, if it's a serious, egregious thing, right? But no, what they've done is they've actually created a version of this power that's like the drive-through window of changing municipal laws. And that's they're never going to be able to drive down the road. You know, you're going to be sitting there thinking, I could go through that drive-thru right now. I could really go for what's in that drive-thru window. And it's so fucking convenient. I don't even need to get out of my car. That's a metaphor, guys. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, what is he talking about?
Really
is this I'm like, are we getting masks in the drive-thru windows again? Is that right? We got 5 free masks. Remember we got those one ply masks?
They weren't great masks, but they were there.
Fuck, I should have preserved that and tried to sell it on eBay as like a relic of Alberta policy.
I'm sure I've got like a bunch somewhere. Yeah.
Well, it was only supposed to be one per household. What do you mean you got a bunch?
Well, you know.
Did you extend the pandemic single-handedly? Richard, I feel like that's what's happened here.
I don't know.
Hey Carter, here's my transition to the municipal side of things, Carter, which is if you are absorbing this as a city council right now, choose anyone, choose any single one. Obviously, you got to fight it. You got to have your statement that says, well, no, this is a threat to democracy. You got to do a version of all that sort of stuff, right? But are you also spending any energy trying to ensure your constituents know that this is any issue that they have with you is now a provincial issue? Like, how much energy and how are you trying to put into the argument that, you know what, if you have a problem with we, you actually have a problem with them? And how are you being able to do something like that?
Well, I would be jumping all over it and saying this is, you know, the provincial government is now claiming responsibility for big issues. I'd be going back to my mental health policy. I'd be canceling my mental health policy. I'd be saying, you know what, the provincial government wants to take control of this. I'd be making sure that the housing initiatives and homelessness initiatives would all be slashed. You know how much money we could save if we got rid of all the provincial responsibilities that municipalities were actually doing? We could save a small fortune. You want your income, you want your property tax cut? No problem.
If you're advising Sohi tomorrow or Gondek tomorrow, would you say, you know what, you guys have taken a lot on and it's clearly they want to take this on. Would you performatively, quasi-performatively slash a bunch of things that are like, I'm sorry, this isn't the province's lane? Would that be your clapback?
Number one, I would do that because I actually believe that that's what should be done. I was against fluoride, not because I'm against fluoride, but because it's a public health initiative and it should be paid for by the provincial government. The provincial government needs to, at some point, take responsibility for the things that they're supposed to be responsible for. A mental health initiative run by the city is the most inefficient means to do mental health. We should be doing homelessness through the province. It's their responsibility. It's articulated as such in the Constitution. Why the fuck aren't we making them do it? You know, the provincial government's all pissed off when the federal government steps on their toes and does these things. Well, we're all pissed. We respect their rights. We respect their opportunity to get these things done. And now we're going to point to them when things don't go properly, right? Downtown safety, crime, that's a provincial responsibility. You should talk to those guys. You know, Corey, all of these things.
How would you advise a clapback? And it's... It could be immediate, like Carter's being like slashing certain programs and being like, these are provincial jurisdiction. And clearly they want to once again get involved in things that they've, put on the sidelines for too long. But there's also the argument of ensuring that the population knows what's happening here and political protection of your council, yourself as a mayor, to say, you know what, if you have a problem with me, in fact, you can now transfer that problem over to the province. I'm not the issue. They are. How would you start thinking about that as a city council? Would you put any time and energy into either the two things I'd mentioned here, or would you just straight up fight back against this legislation on its merits and that would be your play?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you can kind of imagine that you could put together a very interesting bucket of things to show the province that the people of Calgary or the people of Edmonton or the people of Grand Prairie or the people of anywhere. I feel strongly that this shouldn't be the case. My goodness, you could put a plebiscite if you wanted, or you could attempt to. Maybe the province would stop you. That'd be interesting in its own right. But
yeah.
But on the next one, saying, you know, be it resolved, the people of Calgary are strongly opposed to this attack on autonomy, or doesn't even need to be framed like that. Like, the people of Calgary believe that municipal government should be autonomous in their scope and that it's not a good power that they can... It doesn't matter. I don't even know what it is. I'm not going to try to create it there. But, you know, this departmentalization of the cities, trying to make them just an extension of the Alberta, government is very, I won't even say it's very troubling because it depends on your worldview here. It's very big. Like, it's a very big change. And I think it will inevitably force councils to act differently. They'll start thinking about whether they want to be standing up to the province, knowing the province could just push them right over at any time. Right. And it will also mean that a different type of people will try to become councillor, because you're not really in charge if you're council and mayor now, are you? Right. It's just a very different situation, and it's going to have long term effects here. And so if you want to fight it as the city, you're going to have to fight it in a way that it kind of hurts the provincial government's standing with the public. And that's not going to be that easy to do, especially if you're the deeply unpopular councils of Calgary or Edmonton. So if you really
want... Frankly, that's what I was getting at the heart of, yeah. Right? Like, as deeply unpopular council or council and mayor combos, depending on which city we're talking about here, is there any political upside for you while you fight to also kind of say, well, you know, to try to start making the case that you're not to blame?
Well, no, I actually was just going to say, like, if you really want people to be fighting up against the province, you've got to actually have people from outside of council leading this charge, because the current councils are so unpopular. I think it's just kind of a bit of a pinata for the government to go after.
Right.
This is John Shannon. Join Bob McCowan and me weekdays for the best sports talk you'll find anywhere on the Bob McCowan Podcast. For years, we've talked to the biggest names in the business about their sports and get the best answers. It's a show that digs deeper than the headlines and gets both sides of the story. It's opinion, analysis, facts, and yes, some friction. Every day, Monday through Friday, that's the Bob McCowan Podcast on your favorite podcast platform.
I want to talk about the political party pilot in Calgary and Edmonton.
Yeah.
And there are so many questions here.
Pilot is a hilarious concept.
It's their term, not mine, to be absolutely clear.
Hilarious. Rick McIver, one of the most absurd kind of comments I've ever heard at a moment like this, where Rick McIver said, well, yeah, 70% are opposed to the idea of municipal political parties. So don't worry.
He literally says that at the press conference.
He does. Yeah. And then he says, so we're only putting it in 2% of municipalities, Calgary and Edmonton. Right,
you know, the biggest ones that cover what, yeah, like
literally
70% of the population.
Well, I don't know because 60? Of like the metro areas, but certainly it's half the province's population. Like, what
amazing.
A joke! Yeah, it's crazy.
Carter, we know it was going to come. We didn't know what form it would take. Well, now we have a better sense of what form it would take. But that doesn't change the conversation I want to have here, which is this is kind of rare for political operatives like us to have the opportunity to build something net new. The closest thing I'm reminded of, and this is not a perfect comparison, is the hype that people had around cannabis when there was a net new industry that came online and people were like, well, we want to get on the ground floor of this. Whatever it takes to invest it, it's going to last for the next 100 years. Whoever the incumbent players become, they're going to be the incumbent players for the next 100 years in cannabis, a net new industry. That was the hype. That was the talk.
Yeah.
Carter? Yeah, and yes, you're going to tell me about where cannabis went.
Yeah, and what the fuck happened in cannabis? Like, there were a million entrants, so many went out of business, way overbuilt. All of a sudden, there were 1,000 options, and now you're seeing a great reckoning. Like, it was ridiculous. I remember you could walk down Center Street near where I live here in Che, and there were like 5 of them, and there was no way they were all going to survive, right? And they're
not. In some ways, not a perfect comparison. Other ways, though, maybe lessons to be learned.
Might actually be the perfect comparison, because this is what's going to happen. You're going to have a trillion political parties now.
This is the rest of the conversation I want to have, Carter, is how should us wide-eyed operatives, strategists, practitioners of the political craft, who've always wanted to brand a party from scratch, name a party from scratch, house a party infrastructure, recruit candidates, things that we've been doing for other mastheads, which we have values alignment, but they're not our own. Oh my goodness, maybe you even if you create this, maybe you lead this. Maybe you're the perpetual leader of this. Maybe you tell the mayor what to do. Maybe you tell 15 council
again?
Candidates what this is
again. Yeah, again for, oh my yeah. God.
These are the machinations I can imagine that are going on in back rooms right now. On I was going to say both sides of the spectrum, but across the spectrum is the fairest way to say it.
Yeah.
So what I want is a clear-eyed, strategic point of view in this episode where we spit out to say, how should we think about creating political parties here if the end outcome is we want to create a political party? The Strategist Podcast, how are we thinking about this? How are we taking the lessons from previous political creations upstarting, from cannabis, from other startups, from the political dynamics right now between province and city, from the council dynamics of unpopular councils in the two cities we're talking about, to mayors that are struggling with their popularity as well. Let's have a clear-eyed one-page memo that comes out of this conversation that gives us a sense of how we should think about this, because we're not like the rest, Carter. We're better than the rest, and we're going to have better thinking than the rest, right?
Well, I think we have to start then, if we're better than the rest, we have to start with the money side. And the money side changed significantly in this bill. If Bill 20 is passed and becomes law, TPAs are all but finished. And TPAs were super important in the last number of elections. Third-party advertisers is what a TPA stands for. They used to be able to get donations worth $30,000. It was going to be $35,000 this time around from corporations and unions to use in election advertising. Now that donation limit's been dropped to $5,000. At the same time that each individual candidate is able to raise $5,000 from corporations and unions. So why would you set up a TPA? You can already raise $5,000 from each corporation. This is going to be a major cash inflow for candidates. And I mean, when I say candidates, I mean not only mayoralty candidates, but councillor candidates as well. So now if you're thinking to yourself, why would I start a party? Why, you know, because I think you have to begin at, should I form a party? And one of the reasons why would be to balance off revenue opportunities. The revenue, I mean, I would assume that like most political parties, and we don't know this because it's going to be done by regulation.
Yeah.
But most political parties have the ability to balance off where revenues are, you know, move money around, right? So that if Corey's more successful in fundraising than I am, then we can move some money from Corey's riding into my riding. One assumes that that's going to be available. So that's one really big reason why a party becomes very viable right off the bat. The second reason why the party becomes viable off the bat, and this is something that I've struggled with, and we actually did some of this on the Gondek campaign, is marrying ground game, which happens primarily at the counselor level, with air war, which happens primarily at the mayoral level. If you've ever worked on a council campaign and tried to get media attention, it's difficult, right? There's only so many of my signs were vandalized stories that you can get into. And they're not going to cover everybody's policy releases unless they're like supremely bad, right? It's super hard to get media attention. So a party gives you the ability to do air war and ground game and marry them together. And it also gives you a brand, which is what you were talking about right off the bat. People want to know who they're voting for, and they want to understand, they want a simple rubric of how do they make their decision. And a party is a simple rubric of, oh, this is the center right. Oh, this is the center left. Oh, this is the far left. Oh, this is the right wing. Right. And that's why Danielle Smith has put this together. She believes that the voters have been hoodwinked. And now if they just had a party that said we're right wing, they're going to be, the voters will no longer be hoodwinked and they'll be able to vote for the appropriate party. So there you go. Problem solved itself.
I mean, it's such a fascinating, I believe you're right, but I think it's such a fascinating theory given that in both Calgary and Edmonton, the NDP beat the UCP, right? Yeah. So like, what is this theory based on?
Stupidity.
Well, it is an interesting theory, right? And I like Carter starting with the money here, Corey, and I'm going to go to you in a second, right? Talking about the prospective death of TPAs, third-party advertisers, the ballooning coffers of individual candidates. But Carter asks a really interesting fundamental question. Should I start a political party? Like the binary question of yes and no. Should I belong to a political party? Should we start a political party, so to speak? How are you thinking about that question? Because in some ways, it now kind of looks like political parties are here, so we all have to join a political party, right? Is the option to not join and not start up and still be successful on the table to you? Based on, I know this is so limited in terms of how long we've been able to take this in and absorb it, but in how you process it, is not doing anything on the political party basis still a viable path, you would think?
I don't think it is for councillors anymore. Maybe it is for mayor. I think it's a really interesting thing because, yeah, polling showed 70% didn't want parties, but there will be a land rush to parties now because you'll be putting yourself at such a massive disadvantage if you're not a member of a political party for the reasons that Stephen just said, right? You'll be able to coordinate. You'll be able to share a back-end system. You'll be able to share a brand. Everybody, like 14 councillors, paying into a brand, you know, I don't know if they'll literally be paying. You hear what I'm saying, though, like sharing the cost of these things. There's just going to be so much better off than the person who goes on their own and tries to recreate an entire political party on their own. The brand, the policies, you know, the back-end systems, the fundraising apparatus, the organizers who will now be perpetual in between campaigns. And so you're not just walking around trying to find volunteers in the name of candidate X for the first time, right? So this is... I mean, you would be at such a serious disadvantage, I think, in particular to be a councillor and not be on the ticket. The reason why I think a mayor might, at least in the short term, still stand a chance as an independent is simply because the game is a little bit different for them. You do have a little bit more ability to pull in, you know, the media, and you do have a bigger volunteer base. But the challenge will be over time, that advantage will also kind of accrue to anybody who's a member of a political party because, again, of the back-end systems, like once they exist. They don't right now, right? But after a few elections, those back-end systems, those people who always volunteer with Calgary Tomorrow or whatever the party becomes.
Sorry, and just to be clear, for our party, it's Velgi United is what we're calling
it. Oh, Velgi United, okay.
Yeah, okay, okay. Yeah.
So you're a Velgi United guy. You've always supported Velgi United council candidates. Why would you support an independent? And so... That's the risk. That's what's going to happen and now. So that's
gonna have
just the data. Reality.
They're going to have money. They're going to, I mean, the fundraising now has changed so you can raise money in every year instead of just in the final year. So a party is going to be in place every, you know, and raising money every single year.
It's
going
to probably have an executive director, probably a fundraising chair, probably paid fundraising chair who has to raise three times their salary to justify their payment, kind of like a small nonprofit would, right? Like all these sort of things that are available to a provincial party or available to someone who's had the ability to raise money all year round. Is now going to find itself into this ecosystem. I appreciate the analysis on the candidate side, but let's keep our hats on as strategists.
Yep.
How are we creating the most attractive political vehicle, Carter? I'm going to go back to you. So first, your analysis was on the money. Then it was the binary question on should we start a party or not. I'm leaning towards the answer is yes, both from an academic exercise of this podcast, but also to Corey's point, very astutely put, for the counselors that are going to need a home, how do we build the nicest, most welcome, open door, best furnished home for them? What else do we need to think about, Carter? I'm turning it over to you and Corey. I'll get you to yes and add some pieces to what Carter's about to say too.
Pick a lane, right? So that the lane is very identifiable. Are you going to be the center left? Are you going to be the center right? Are you going to be the center? Are you going to be right wing, left wing? Who are you going to be and how are you going to articulate your brand using issues? Right. So picking on issues. The second thing that I've been working really hard on is finding the headliner. The headliner is going to be everything. The mayor in British Columbia, the mayoralty candidate essentially can start and stop a party. Right. So, you know, the NPA is a big party in Vancouver until it's not. Vision Vancouver is a huge party. You know, Gregor Robertson was the mayor and had control of council. And then it wasn't. Now it's ABC. You know, ABC is, and that was just Ken Sims deciding that he was going to be the candidate and he was going to create a party, a brand new party, and that was going to become the winner. So the headliner becomes the party, the brand, in much the same way that the leader of the provincial party becomes the brand. So like, for example, when you win on June 22nd, Zane, you know, because it's over.
We're all going to be like winners on June 22nd.
Oh, my Lord.
Really upset.
But what I appreciated was the subtext there was you too know it's over. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you for jumping in.
No, we're all going to be winners regardless, Carter. Come on, let's just keep going. Yeah.
Anyways, I mean, I think the headliner and the lane, and then the third thing, and this is really important, is what kind of structures you're going to have in place, right? So when you approach a candidate and you say, you know, I'd like you to be the candidate in Ward 13, what are you bringing that candidate in Ward 13? Well, we've got this headliner. You know, this is our mayoralty candidate. They're going to be super strong. Here's our fundraising apparatus. Here's our databasing apparatus. Here's our volunteer structures. And, you know, do you want to be a part of that? Do you want to just add your name to this already existing infrastructure? Or would you rather go off and create this infrastructure on your own?
I'm going to come back to you on a few things you said here, Carter. Corey, can I open up a bracket with you before I go back to you adding to this list and reacting to Carter's additions? The bracket I want to open up with you is structure and headliner. And I'm converging those two pieces that Carter put together in one and to say, who runs this thing? Because in a provincial context, the leader is the leader, right? The leader of the party is like the leader of the party. In this case, is the mayoral candidate the head of the party? As soon as Stephen Carter finds the candidate for LG United, is he handing over the keys and being like, there you go, mayoral candidate. This is your machine now. Or are the strategists, in this case, to be very specific, the three of us in this hypothetical scenario, still running the party? That, you know, if we don't like that mayoral candidate, they don't succeed, Velger United still keeps going. Our party is still strong, so to speak. You know, that we've got an infrastructure that, you know, yes, the mayoral candidate is the leader, but we're like, we've started this thing, we lead this thing. We're the ones who attracted the organizers, not the mayoral candidate, et cetera, et cetera. Talk to me about leadership of a party like this in your mind. Carter, I'll get your thoughts on this, and then we'll go back to the list.
Who runs the Democratic Party in the United States? I mean, this is one of the challenges with a new party. I mean, this is what's going to be so interesting about this, frankly. Who runs it is a question that you can sort of define organizationally, like on a charter, on like a set of like, you know, party bylaws. But the reality is, over time, parties become self-perpetuating or they die. Either there's a bunch of people who just say, I'm a member of this party, and yes, the leadership is going to change, but I'm always here, or it will be very transient vehicles like you see in places like Vancouver, where they're in, they're out, they're gone, and these parties just don't exist anymore. And they become like here for a good time and not a long time. And it's still an open question to me what kind of parties we're going to get municipally. My assumption is kind of probably that's the type of party we'll get rather than these big establishment parties that are self-perpetuating, but time will tell, right?
Mm.
I do want to say, and I do want to underline, this is not blank paper. You keep talking about this like it's a blank paper exercise, but one of the challenges, I think, for anybody organizing a party right now is we have counselors. We have mayors.
I'm getting there.
Well, yeah. I'm going to get you there faster. Like, one of the interesting things that we are going to have to contend with as cities, as we start thinking about how these things come together, is that there are existing candidates known as sitting councillors. They have existing positions. There will be insane opportunity for conflict if you try to put multiple people in the same boat together there. They all have volunteers. They all have infrastructure. They might be able to sign in on principle on something and then really come apart on specifics down the road. An issue comes up. It could fracture the coalition before the coalition ever runs together. And that's a real interesting challenge. And that's a challenge that's unique to this time. Because you could easily imagine if we also didn't have councils until 2024, right?
Yeah, until last week when this was announced,
right?
Yeah.
Party would create a platform. Candidates would sign on to that platform. Either they would
be selected
as in a primary or self-select, and there'd be no surprises. But the challenge they're going to have now is they're going to come together and say, I think we're on the same team. Yeah, let's all agree to be on the same team. And then they're going to have to fucking figure it out. And that's a really fascinating challenge for me because it doesn't have that infrastructure I was talking about. There is no kind of democratic party where there's people who are sitting there who are going to help you figure it all out and say, we got to come together for the good of the party. The good of what fucking party? There was no party until 30 seconds ago. So, like, strap in. Like, this in particular, this cycle is going to be buck wild.
Nutso. Well, here's the question then that stems from that, Carter, which is, as we'll continue in the list in a second, but I like that Corey's kind of sped us up here. How does a strategic courting of existing counselors look like? And at the heart of my question is this a gold rush? And is there a first mover advantage? Does speed actually matter here? To be able to say, we've got the best organizers. You know these 10 names? We've got them. You know this back-end sort of fundraising system? We've got the 6 people that have raised money historically. We've already have this. So give to me, like, what your lessons and your model would look like for recruitment. Would speed be part of it? And how would you court existing folks? Or are you of the mind saying, fuck the existing folks, this is an unpopular council, it's unpopular, man, I don't care, I'm going to go net new on all of it. How are you thinking about this, Carter?
Well, first of all, anybody who's in politics in Alberta would have known that this was coming months ago, right? Probably would have started months ago. Probably would have pulled together a large number of organizers and probably would have pulled together a large number of potential candidates. Corey brings up an interesting problem with the incumbents. A large number of incumbents would probably be a problem, but no incumbents would probably be a problem too. So solving all of that would have started, I think, way before this actual legislation.
Right now is announced. Like you the think, end of, you, think, you remember the movie Watchmen? I think it was a sequel to Dave, if I'm not mistaken.
It was a fantastic sequel to Dave.
Where he's like, you know, when am I going to do this? I already did it. It happened 3 months ago, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of where we are. I mean, I think that this is just...
let's just pause. The episode title, Corey Ruins Watchmen.
I think that's...
But, spoilers. Spoils the film. Spoilers. Yeah, also, Carter, please continue soft launching whatever project it is you're working on
right
now.
I'm not soft launching anything.
And here's the thing. I soft
launched
Bruce Willis
3 months ago.
He was dead the whole time. It's crazy.
Yeah,
you watch it again with that eye.
Here's the thing. The key would be to put together a huge and strong team of people that people feel like, okay, right? Carter's there. Oh, that's really good. Right? Hogan's there. Holy shit, that's fantastic. Well, Zane's not there, but no one really seems to give a shit, right? So But Annalise is there, just so everything's
catching
fine.
Catching strays there, Zane.
Right?
You can't pin Zane down words for shit.
No, I mean, I think that you really want to make sure that you'd have strong organizers, that you have the ability to do the money, that you have the ability to say we've got the data structures in place. All of those things are going to be super important. And then when you're courting the counselors, you'd want to make sure that they feel like they've got autonomy, that they're in charge of their own process of choosing where they're going to be. But you make sure that you've lined the bed for them. Don't worry, your positions that you've taken, the things that are important to you are important to us. You know, we want to make sure that you get reelected too. Oh, and by the way, if you don't run with us, we are going to run a full slate. Right? We are going to run a full slate. And it's not a threat. It's not a threat. It's just an implied threat, an implied reality. We're running a full slate. And if you want to be a part of it, you should be a part of it. And these conversations aren't something that take place in the last year of the preparation. It's something that takes place basically for, 2.5 years before the election, because you have to establish trust. You have to establish vision. A cooperative vision doesn't come just from the mayor's the mayoralty candidate. A cooperative vision is going to come from the entire team, right? Unless you're in Craig Chandler's shoes, you're able to pull together Calgary United and just say, we're the Conservatives, which is what Craig Chandler's doing, right? Calgary United, we're the Conservatives. Super easy, except there's probably going to be two or three factions of, well, we're the Conservatives. So that's what I'm really looking forward to, seeing how all of these develop.
Join Bob McCowan with John Shannon every weekday as they talk to and about the biggest sports stories. Listen as Bob and John talk to the people who make the biggest decisions in sports and the people who cover those sports. There's opinion, analysis, facts, and friction as McCowan and Shannon duel about stories across the sports world. That's the Bob McCowan Podcast. Original episodes every Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform.
Corey, I'm going to come to you in a second here, but Carter, give me your answer on the following question. Who owns this thing?
Well, I mean, I think that in general, what you'd want to do is you'd want to have some sort of a large steering committee. Right, that there has to be a group of people who are responsible for the direction of the party, especially early. Right, if it is just a small group of people, the mayoralty candidate and 3 or 4 others, which is what it was, like Nenshi 2010, 6 people. Mm-hmm. Right, Gondek 2021, there was maybe 5 or 6 when we started. It was a very small group. It was very easy to begin these campaigns because you don't need a lot of people to get them started. But I think with a party, you definitely need a group of about 50, 60, 75 people who have ownership of the party, who come in and I don't want to say argue, because argue, perfect in a perfect situation, you're bringing together a group of people who in general agree with one another. But this group needs to come together and put together the bones of the party. And that needs to be done. I think the bones of the party need to be done before the party legislation or before the party regulations are done. The bones of the party need to be put in place. And I'm not the only one who thinks that. Craig Chandler's doing the exact same thing. He's putting the bones of his party together right now.
Corey, question for you. How would you start thinking of a courting exercise of incumbents? What would you need on the table? Does speed matter to you? Would you go a little bit slower? Would you see how other things play out? Would you let others be on the bleeding edge so you can be on the cutting edge sort of thing in this sense? I'm almost kind of bringing back cannabis as an example, right? Would you let others fail so, you can kind of, see what's true, who's who, not necessarily rush it, so to speak. How are you thinking about it? I'm not imposing my view on that. I'm just kind of throwing alternative options on the table.
Well,
just like a prime minister would, he be hosting a podcast? And that option is, of course, open through employee of the Treasury Board, Doug Wong.
So does speed matter? Yeah, it does and it doesn't. I guess here's the thing. Like, everybody who wants to create a political party right now should take, a beat and just make sure that they're clear why they are creating a political party, what they actually stand for, the reason that they should exist, and the gap that they fill that nobody else is currently filling right now. Or else you are going to get something like the cannabis situation where, despite there being four other cannabis streets or shops on the street, you're going to open the fifth and you think it's all going to work out great for you. No, that's going to fuck everything up for everybody, right? So I do think that before you even get to like that, the how can you, you should think, should I? And I do want to make sure that that's somewhat underlined there, because otherwise it's going to be chaos over the next bit. I think it's going to be chaos anyways over the next bit, but I think that's going to be a big problem. In terms of if I was trying to build a party and I was trying to make it the most appealing party possible, especially, so here's what I believe is going to happen. And this is a kind of maybe a long walk to answer your question, but here's what I believe is going to happen.
Let's take it. I'm curious.
The first version of municipal political parties will be a very light touch. They'll be deeply federated. There'll be this idea that, but for a couple of core things, no party whip. We all generally believe the same things. We're just going to do what we can and we're going to hang together. And every election after that, that whip will get stronger and stronger until people ultimately are just cogs in a party machine. That's what I believe is going to happen here, because the imperatives of governing will come in. And the first time that they lose a vote, they being the winning coalition, because somebody broke with them because there's a weak whip, they'll say, well, that didn't work. And next time, let's make it more clear. And let's get a little bit more to the party. And let's just keep going on this particular front. So you ask me how I would make an appealing political party right now. I would be offering them that deeply federated option. I'd be saying, hey, we're all going to use the same color and we believe generally the same things, but we're all on our own, you know, because that's ultimately, that's the most appealing version of a political party to a candidate. But I don't believe it's going to end there ultimately. So like the first bidding war will be, what's
interesting.
The first bidding war will be for the lightest touch party. And the second bidding war, like, as it moves on, it's going to be a much tighter thing.
Have you been in some of these meetings? Have you been in these meetings?
I'll let you get in on this in a second, Carter.
But there's almost like, I am not involved in anything to do with any municipal party. Yeah, I actually don't like municipal political parties at all.
Sure, whatever.
I don't like municipalities. I'm one ahead of you.
Yeah, way to go, Danielle. You've got things really going your way.
Hey, listen, Carter, this is, Corey brings up two fascinating, like, spectrums, right? Control, I'm going to just put in loose or tight, right? Yeah. Like, control in terms. And then the other one he put on the table earlier in an answer was the type of shot that you're taking with this political party. Legacy, long-standing, or, like, limited, good for the moment? How are you thinking about both of these things in your mind? Like, both in terms of control and then the creation of a party. This is the creation of Velger United that the strategists are doing, right? Are we going for a big swing that lasts for a generation? Or are we saying, let's just meet the moment? If we need to reconstitute a party for the next cycle, we'll fucking do that for the next cycle. We're just here to meet the moment. We can house these people in another banner in another color if we need to, kind of like how Vancouver has done it for a while, or at least in recent memory, I should say, so to speak. How are you thinking about both of these strategic questions, control and the type of shot you're taking with putting this brand out, putting this infrastructure out on the table?
I think that these are going to be mostly short-term brands. So, you know, they're going to be like the Jolt Cola. You know, they're going to be around for a little while.
No way Zane knows what Jolt Cola was.
You've got no romance. It seems like you've got no romance with the brand, so to speak, at all.
No,
really. Like, it's just a vehicle to, like.
I'm a big fan that brands need to reflect the will of the electorate. And sometimes that means the brands, I'd much rather have a new brand that can win than an old brand that's going to lose. So if that
and
means,
try to shoehorn everything, being like, "Fuck, we gotta wear this color." Like, what well, we've like, got no
oh
choice
my God,
but to wear this color.
The party's more important than winning. No. The whole point is to win. So let's go win first. So that's kind of the way I would think of this. Is that like ABC in Vancouver when the NPA was no longer a valuable or winning entity, they just went off and said, okay, fuck it, we're going to create this brand new quote-unquote conservative
but I guess let me be clear on the heart of the question, because Corey's statement was he thinks most parties will end up in this limited run sort of way, but the question I have as a strategist is, are you strategizing for a limited run party? And I just want to make sure I ask it in a way that allows like fairness to the fact that we're constructing something. So in that part of our memo where we're like, are we actually shooting for something that lasts a while, or is this just we're happy to kill this if it needs to be next cycle? Like, how are you thinking about it from a strategist perspective?
Most likely way to get your political party to the next election is to win the first election. Then you will have incumbents, and then those incumbents will be part of continuing it forever. Right. The longer you just stay in power, is the length of the life of the party. If you lose right off the bat and you don't get win any seats, no councillors are elected under your platform, you know what? That party's going away. And I suspect there'll be five or six significant parties in this campaign. And of those five or six parties, at least four of them won't elect anybody and they'll be gone.
Corey, I've got another sort of sideline question, and then I'll jump back to the list for further analysis and additions. Value or no value in having parallel parties across the two pilot municipalities? Or are Edmonton's issues Edmonton issues and Calgary issues are Calgary issues, and there should be no Velgie United in both cities so that people can rally around the call of Velgie, which is, of course, perpetual availability to run. That is our MO and our North Star.
I don't know. That's an interesting question. There's economies of scale that you can increase if you're in multiple cities. You can, and you have versions of this, right? You can have sharing back-end systems, sharing infrastructure, sharing brand is the more extreme version of it. Beyond that, sharing kind of governance that would then allow everybody to sort of collectively across two cities create policy is the most extreme. I think that most extreme version, it's hard to imagine having, like, I've basically split my adult life between Calgary and Edmonton. I'm largely a citizen of both cities. They're very different cities, and they're seized with very different things. And it's hard to imagine that it's going to be one size fits all there. But I can certainly see some benefit of sharing some of the existing infrastructure. And in a funny way, if the government hadn't said effectively, you can't use an existing political party, it can't be like the local NDP, the local UCP.
UCP, right.
There might have been a strong push to having a local NDP and a local UCP because it would certainly allow the sharing of the infrastructure. But there will always be that countervailing force that makes you part of a bigger picture that can cause challenges as well. So I don't actually know the answer to that. That's a fascinating question. Like, where is kind of the optimal size of this particular organism? Like, too big and it just it's too unwieldy, and too small and it's just, it can't feed itself. It's just not efficient enough. And I don't know where that is, but I do think at the very least, there will be strong collaboration and coordination between parties in the two cities, because that makes sense. Because you're going to be dealing with the same problems at the same time, in the same way, on the same schedule.
There are.
Carter, what do you think?
You know, in the last election, the telephone calls between the organizers back and forth were significant. There's only a certain number of people, so there will likely be some sort of loose affiliation or loose association. I would not expect to see co-branding. I think that would be disastrous. Like,
tell me less about what you expect to see. Tell me more about what you would do, right? Like, you're strategizing. Yeah. Tell me what you would do. That's what I'm curious. Would you co-brand? Would you find a similar color palette, put Edmonton in front of another, put Calgary in front of another one?
No, I mean, I would be working really hard to make sure that each city felt like it had its own structure. Both structures shared certain DNA so that they can work together afterwards.
Corey?
Yeah, again, it depends on what you're trying to do, but here's both a prediction and if I were trying to do a certain thing, a situation where I would share branding between cities. Let's keep in mind, 70% of people don't want municipal political parties. One of the first municipal political parties we are going to see is basically the no political parties political party, like Independent Voices Party, or the what was originally in BC the Nonpartisan Alliance, when it started as people saying we don't want political parties, morphed into the right wing party, but that's kind of the genesis. You are going to see potentially people who say we don't want parties, we want to share the infrastructure though for strong voices who are independent, who don't actually have a party whip of any kind of substance whatsoever. I can almost guarantee some version of that's going to occur. Now, whether it will even be successful enough to be resonant in the next campaign, open question. My guess is no, but it's certainly possible, and there's no reason that couldn't share branding between two cities.
Talk to me about branding for a second, Corey. Carter's kind of said, you know, like, pick a lane was one of his items on the list, right? He also says, pick a headliner, discuss the structure. We've talked at length about Calgary and Edmonton, in a sense. We've talked at length about, you know, the type of swing and control. So we'll add those to the list. Talk to me specifically about branding. How would you think about it here? Any lessons? Because we could easily overcomplicate branding, but we could also underthink it in certain ways. You know, one of the ways we could potentially underthink is kind of the example I threw out there, which I also wouldn't advocate for, which is, you know, create a vehicle, slap Edmonton in front of one another one, Calgary in front of another one, call it a day, right? Like, make it that obvious. How would you start thinking about branding if you were starting a political party as a strategist?
Well, you have a couple of options, and this is not a complete list, but it's kind of a good starting point when you're thinking of political parties. You have political parties that name their philosophy in the name of the party, liberal, conservative. Oh, I immediately know what those things are. You could imagine, for example, centrist, moderate being names that might be resonant in a city. Those kinds of things could kind of pull out there. You have names that are in some ways more about where you want to be, right? Like, so Coalition for the Future of Quebec, CAQ, right? And maybe it's a name that is actually saying nothing at all, and you're trying to give yourself that flexibility. Saskatchewan Party, Alberta Party, BC United, right? That's a different version of the name as well. And there are names that kind of fall in the cracks in between. I'd say actually New Democratic Party is one of those, where there was historically a new party, and then there was this Democratic Party, it got all smashed together. And, you know, there's reasons for the name, but the reasons aren't particularly well remembered at this point. And it's kind of longstanding and goes back. So lots of choices there. I think the reality is the most edifying names are off the table, because liberal and conservative are both going to be namespace you can't use, because those are the names of existing parties. New Democrat, even in the Canadian context, means something to us. Can't use it, right? And so I imagine you're going to get a lot of ones that are talking about Calgary's future, Edmonton tomorrow, you know, Calgary for the next century, whatever it is. Like, you're going to have stuff that is kind of like the bromides. So we'll see where it goes.
Carter, any
Carter,
thoughts
was on any of those names on your list?
None of those names were on the list.
Okay.
Thank Forward, for Calgary. Tomorrow, today, Calgary. Calgary in tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, I worked for Surrey Forward. I worked, I mean, there's a whole bunch of these things. I mean, it doesn't really matter what the name, like, the name again is one element of the brand, right? And the brand itself is going to be substantively your mayoralty candidate. So how do you fit the mayoralty candidate and the brand name together? And that's kind of, I think, where, you know, I could see all kinds of different names and names and brand positions being talked about. And the most important thing is going to be, how much are we reflecting back to the population what they care about? Because that's what the brand should be, is we are reflecting back what you care about. I could see a tax freeze party could work out. I mean, I wouldn't name it that, but you know,
what about like a sovereignist party for Crescent Heights East, better known, of course, as Che?
I can see that mostly in Ward 7.
Yeah.
Not anywhere else.
The Czechists. We could be the Czechists. Czechists?
Czechists, I think.
Yeah.
Czechist sounds fine. Czechist sounds racist.
I don't know if Czech. Maybe Google that before you say Czechist sounds fine, but let's move
on. Yeah, I think that's not necessarily what you think.
I'm not going to Google it. It's fine. Yeah. I think it should be fine. Hey, Carter, final question. We're launching Velger United. We've taken all these considerations. Money.
Yeah.
We've talked about candidates. We've talked about how we court candidates. We talk about picking a lane, pick a headliner, structure, etc.
Yeah.
Would you launch your party with your headliner? Is that like a, like, when we go, we have to have the top of the ticket announced? Or do you announce the fact that you've got infrastructure? And I ask you this because Calgary United, which is, well, I believe that's what it's called, if I'm not mistaken, trying to like carve out the political lane, no candidate associated with it yet, at least from what I can tell.
Yeah, no.
Do you have your headliner announce simultaneously?
Well, I think that's going to be a function of the actual rules. So you can raise money now So maybe, yeah, it looks to me like at the very least, the headliner's name is going to soft launch as you're raising the money. So I think that a hard launch of the campaign brand and the headliner together, I think would probably be the best possible scenario.
Corey, what do you think?
It just occurred to me as we're talking, one of the things that has often been a consideration for people running for mayor or even council is they announce and they're in, and that's kind of it. And often they have to leave their jobs or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But this also creates a vehicle which you can create like a party as a stalking horse. Oh, well, I'm just putting my efforts behind this cause, this idea that we've got to make, you know, a better Calgary. And so then all of a sudden, like you could just come at the last minute, but like all of the infrastructure's there and fundraising's there for you.
Stop coming to my meetings, man. Fuck off.
Carter's making a stalking horse. Okay, we're going to leave that segment there. Create on to move it on to our final segment. Our over under Stephen Carter in our lightning round. Still, I'm just going to check on the record. Yep, still doing it for you.
Oh, great.
Carter, over under five. Five municipal political parties in Calgary, over or under in your mind?
I think it'll be over.
I think it'll be over. Corey, over under on five?
I think way over. It's
way over.
Crazy. Yeah, I think it'll be crazy. And I also think that Tyler Durden was a figment of the imagination of the narrator in the movie Fight Club in 1999. Yeah, you know, it was all in his head.
Did you know Brad Pitt's
always eating something in that movie? Did you know that? Look at every scene.
He's always eating something in Ocean's 11, too. It's kind of his thing.
I think he's just got a thing. I think that he's a food actor. Yeah. Some people are hair actors. Like, Corey's a hair actor.
He's a food actor. I'm a hair actor.
Yeah. And
do you think, like, the food gives him confidence to, like, execute the scene?
I think he likes your beard, the casualness. Like, you know, he's like, I'm so handsome. Look how casual
that I just like this. Yeah, I don't have to. He's a great actor. I do like all the Oceans movies.
Did you guys know that Oppenheimer, they built a bomb? Did you?
That is a bit crazy.
Yeah,
that's insane. Oh, you mean in the movie?
No, I meant in real life. I'm reading a book called right now. It's called Nuclear War: A Scenario. It's really uplifting.
Hmm. Carter, tell me how Bill 20 will age. Worst and best part of Bill 20 in your mind?
Worst part about Bill 20 is the recall and changing of bylaws, which Corey kind of articulated very well at the beginning of the podcast. Best part is that they've changed the money and now we get money back into politics, and I think that that's good.
Worst and best, Corey, Bill 20, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, if you're a big fan of municipal government, for sure, the worst is that they've just entirely subordinated municipalities. And I do think that's going to have an effect on the quality of candidates in the long run. It's going to change a lot of things about municipal government. And I do ultimately worry that this becomes the departmentalization of municipal government. And it's going to have effects. So probably I would say that's the worst. I have to say that's the worst. The best part, man... Yeah, the money, I guess, probably. There are things in it I don't mind in general. Like, there's 29 things, and I'd say 20 of them are fairly unobjectionable. Yeah. You know,
fine. They're fine.
Like, the money is okay because it really was a problem with all of these third-party advertisers, and maybe we'll at least get a good case study as to whether this will now end it. I guess we'll learn soon if third-party advertisers were a consequence of our very tight campaign laws or not, right? Like, that will become clear as a result of this next little bit. That'll be interesting. I'll tell you, and I said a version of this on CBC, I don't mind getting rid of the tabulators. I think they'd become such a crazy distraction for people.
Oh, my God.
I don't think it's, like, a great thing that's happened in it, but if we have a bunch of people who are so deeply concerned about it, let's just count them with our hands again. It's fine. Like,
yeah, I mean, the same thing with
we're all junkies.
We'll just, we want to, you know what? We'll just say flat earthers are right and we won't have to worry about it anymore.
Okay. There are consequences of that. There are no real consequences to just counting the ballots by hand. What are the consequences of counting the ballots?
It's going to cost more money and take a longer time.
Well, democracy's worth it.
Oh my God. Just buy a fucking tabulator.
Like, I mean, there are people like us who sit up there and we really worry about the results of an election, you know, and we want to know. but it doesn't actually change the results of the election. It's kind of the sports mentality of it.
Neither does using a tabulator. Doesn't change the results of the election.
You're wigging out 10% of the population. It's not worth it.
Are you saying it creates the underlying condition for at least some people to say shit like the election was stolen? They used the tabulator. Even if it's a small minority. Yeah.
Let me broaden my point. Nothing is more important in an election than trust. You have to trust that the system has worked. So anything we add in that erodes that trust has to be done very, very carefully. And the benefit has to exceed the potential consequence there. And so we do things like special ballots because we think it's very important people have the ability to vote, right? That's a benefit that we really feel way outweighs the fact that it erodes the trust a little bit. People say, I don't really know how these special ballots work. People are just getting them. I'm never seeing these people. They're not showing up. But we weigh that special ballot's more important. Similarly with advanced polls. Now it's not all on the same day. You've got to put boxes in a certain area. They're not being watched around the clock by all of the scrutineers, as used to be the case in elections in our lifetime, right? But we say it's worth it. It's worth it because you don't have to be available at a certain time. We're making it so that everybody can vote. That's a central tenet of democracy. So again, we're weighing these things and we're saying it's worth it. The challenge is, with tabulators in my mind, the upside's just not there. There's no fucking upside besides our own amusement on election night. And so you can say, yeah, it's a tinfoil hat brigade. Yeah, they're a bunch of idiots. Yeah, it's crazy. I don't know if I disagree with you, but it's not worth it.
You think they're going to stop complaining because there's tabulators, no tabulators? Okay, you don't think they're going to complain about something else?
Well, good. Then let's deal with the next thing too. Then let's deal with the next thing too. Stop being so flip about democracy and trust.
Stop being like so willing to engage a fringe minority that's just stirring up shit. And they're going to continue to stir up shit. And every time we placate them, they just get weirder and fucking weirder.
We live in the country with these people. We have to stop hand waving away 10% of people. Like, no, fuck them. They're the fringe.
Fuck them.
We got to stop doing it.
We got to keep doing that.
On top of that, you want to know what my perfect voting system is? I don't know if it's perfect, but what I think is we've got to kill all of these advanced days. I've begun to hate them because you get weird situations where Sean Chu in Calgary, for example, right? Make it a holiday, put it on a Wednesday, so it's the middle of the week, so you can't just make a long weekend out of it. Have everybody vote there and be done with it. The simplicity of it, just allowing people to see cause and effect, action, result, just something to be said for it. There is something to be said for simplicity in a democracy.
We're going to leave it there. We're going to leave it there, Stephen Carter. That's a wrap on episode 1300 of The Strategist. My name is Zane Velji. With me, as always, Stephen Carter, Corey Hogan, and we, maybe not me, but Justin Trudeau and these two guys. We'll see you next time.